Outrunner. You know, I think that he's a more traditional, polished, refined route runner than Diggs. Diggs absolutely knows how to get open. He's got that Stevie Johnson in him, right? Where you just don't know. He's gonna find a way to look like he's going one way, but go another way. His footwork, like you said. But John Brown is just a really precise route runner. He knows exactly where his landmarks are, what he needs to do, how to stem his route, how to cut it off at a certain spot. I think how to play leverage against a certain cornerback and things like that. So I think that's the difference in them, where you kind of know exactly what you're gonna get from John Brown. He's gonna be exactly where he's supposed to be all the time. Where, yeah, Stephon Diggs may. Also, but he's going to get there in a different way, which is, hey, I'm going to improvise as much as I can to be able to do this and beat this guy immediately off the line. And then you have John Brown, who's got that straight line speed. You know, Diggs is not slow, obviously, but John Brown is known to be a speedster where he can get you over the top. And I think that, there's a difference in them as well. Diggs is a little bit bigger, and he's probably going to be a guy that's going to work back of the end zone a little bit more. He's going to work it. And look, John Brown is very good in the red zone, but I think Stephon Diggs, where he can find really small places to be able to fit and use his body better in those situations as well. So I think they're similar in a lot of ways, like as far as the route running and understanding, how to get open and things like that. But I think their true skill sets are probably different, where you're talking about a speed guy who knows how to run routes versus more of a guy who's just kind of using his athletic ability and his footwork to be able to do that, and then use his size when he needs to high point the ball or go up and get it.
Yeah, just in case it needs clarification, I'm not asking for any potential point of criticism for the decision to get Diggs as a duplicate of Brown. I'm more thinking about them being interchangeable and the opportunities that that might create for Brian Daboll and for Josh Allen.
Well, I think in that regard, we've already seen what John Brown can do as a number one wide receiver. That's what he was in the Bills last year. He had a nice season, guys, right? He caught almost close to 1,100 yards, six touchdowns, I believe it was. He was there for Josh Allen. And I think if something were to happen to Stephon Diggs and he was to miss time, I think this offense, Brian Daboll, Josh Allen, they're all very comfortable with John Brown sliding into that role. The difference now is, who do you have at number two? The big thing that I've always said about the addition of Diggs, yes, he's a very good player, we know that. But what he truly does is he allows that offense to now suddenly have so many more options, because now your number two is so much better. Now your number three, whoever that is, isn't a guy that's getting on the field and is it going to be Robert Foster? Is it going to be Isaiah McKenzie? Is it going to be Duke Williams? Is it going to be Andre Roberts? Like, those guys are your number four now. They're not going to be on the field as much unless there is an injury. But with everybody healthy, you have basically 60 snaps, if you want, of Stephon Diggs and John Brown opposite each other.
Yeah, Brown turning Gilmore around twice on that beautiful touchdown in New England late in the year. I mean, that is indelible. That was just like elite. And to do that to Stephon Gilmore is like, once or twice a year, maybe that happened. But, at the same time, his season could have been so much more if Allen was just not like one of the league's worst at completing passes down the field. Like, for him to get 1,000 yards anyway, Sal, is really almost spectacular. And I'll say this too. So we know, and everybody has reported on how the Bills have made over their wide receiver room in a couple of years. They've taken lots of shots at it, and now they're at this place with Diggs, Brown, and Beasley. I'll put them in that order. And you even have Foster, who was a kind of a breakout guy 2 years ago that just was rendered obsolete last year. And he was good for them too. I think the thing about those three guys is getting open. And, who I follow on Twitter are mostly not former players. There are a few, and they're guys who do the math a lot, and they're looking at, their game tape at the same time. And all three of those guys, in their own way, are standouts. These were all players, Sal, who, when the Bills acquired them, most of my Twitter feed was, "That's really nice." And so there is some common thread there in what the Bills wanted from their wide receivers that they seemingly achieved.
Yeah, and I think, Mike, going into it, really what it does is, going back to what I said earlier, it kind of pushes everyone down the depth chart a little bit. Now suddenly you have a lot of questions about what's going to happen. And they're good questions, right? I mean, not every team, you can't look down most rosters and go, "Oh, look at that team's number four wide receiver. He's an all-pro." That's just not the case. So there's always going to be question marks once you get that deep into any team's roster. And with the Bills, I'm super intrigued about that. I think, whenever I get asked questions, I go on a lot stations and do interviews around the country, and they say, you know, what's the number one question on offense? And, you know, the easy answer is say, you know, what will Josh Allen be this year? But really, to me, like, the most intriguing spot is number four wide receiver, because at some point that guy's going to play. Yes, you'd love for Diggs and Brown to play 16 games each, but generally, like, not everybody plays 16 games. And even during games, if those guys are healthy, you got to give them a break once in a while. So who is that number four? Robert Foster was so good in the second half of his rookie year, and then he was basically invisible last year. Andre Roberts can play. We know he can do, you know, things on the field. He can catch the ball and whatever, but we know that he's more of a return man. But Duke Williams, boy, he had that nice game in Tennessee, had a 100-yard game at the end of the year. Didn't do as much as what we thought he would, or they hoped he would, at least against Houston in the playoffs. Isaiah McKenzie, he became the number three wide receiver by the end of the year. And then suddenly now, guys, they drafted two wide receivers. Yeah, I can't imagine Gabe Davis or Isaiah Hodgins not being on this team. So what happens to the other guys now if that's the case? That's what's really interesting to me.
Yeah, I'd love to know, Sal. Like, you touched on it there in your reply a moment ago. Or Mike mentioned it. Everybody getting open. Like, how much credit the Bills' top three receivers get for being able to get separation. And I think we all know, like halfway through that first year with Allen, they just changed from target radius as a way to offset his lack of accuracy to get guys that are open by more, and that'll work for us. And, I mean, I think the book is still out on whether that's going to be wildly successful, but it seems like they found something that they liked in the other approach as opposed to Kelvin Benjamin and Andre Holmes and just, you know, give me a guy that can win jump balls. It was, if I've got a guy that's open by 3 yards versus a guy that's blanketed, I'd rather have the guy open by 3 yards if my quarterback's going to be a little inaccurate with the ball.
Yeah, even if he's a little bit shorter or has less arm length or whatever, I mean, you still give him a window to be able to get the ball because he doesn't have a guy draped all over him. You know, Isaiah McKenzie is interesting for this too, because what he was is a guy that I think fits into that box, but he's also a guy that they used in different ways and a lot of jet sweeps, right? I mean, they found a way to try to get him the ball, get the ball in his hands. I think that's another thing. Like, Josh Allen just needs to get the ball into some of these guys' hands. So how do you do that? Get them open. If you get them open, get it in their hands, let them do work afterwards. You know, run after the catch, things like that. John Brown was very good at that last year. I mean, I don't know the actual numbers offhand, but, you know, when he had a chance, he could get an extra whatever yards. Cole Beasley's a guy that is able to do that, turn up field. And Stephon Diggs, obviously, is a guy who can do that. So I think that that's something also they concentrate on is guys who, hey, if we get the ball into their hands, we have a chance to make a play here, and that's what we'd like to see.
Brown was a 1,000-yard receiver for Arizona in 2015. He later played for Baltimore before he came here. But that Arizona team, we just brought this up the other day, Joe, how Carson Palmer got an MVP vote or got MVP votes that season, and he had Brown and Fitzgerald go over 1,000. They lose to Carolina. It's the year Newton won the award in the NFC Championship game. Sal Capaccio with us, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. The latest on training camp, I mean, we've just want to make sure we're talking about this and giving everybody the latest, but doesn't really seem like there's much of a latest here, Sal. We're a couple days closer since we last discussed it, but we really don't know, do we, when they might report.
Well, July 28th is supposed to be the date. That's according to the CBA, and by every reporting out there, they're going to stay true to what the CBA says. However, interestingly enough, we still don't have an official reporting date for any team unless there's something out there today that I missed. I haven't seen that. I have not seen one actual team send out an official training camp schedule, meaning they have not said, we are actually coming on this day. Now, Adam Schefter reported that the Texans and Chiefs rookies are actually supposed to be there starting on Saturday. Remember, they report a few days earlier because they play in that Thursday night game, so they have their timeline sped up a bit. And the interesting part about that is he also reported that there's still some protocols and testing and things like that that both the players and the league are working through. So, you know, no one really knows what's going to happen on that front. So, yeah, there is still a lot up in the air. I think the latest is that we still are getting closer to the what is supposed to be the report date, but no one actually knows what's going to happen. And the closer it gets, and that's the case, it gets more and more scary because they seem like they don't have a few things ironed out they need to iron out.
Yeah, I see tweets from, you know, random players. I mean, I J.C. Treader a couple weeks ago. I think Richard Sherman mostly is like, you know, I just feel like he's tweeting out question marks, you know. I mean, not literally, but, like, that's what it feels like. Like, we don't really know what's happening here. We're not getting answers that are satisfactory regarding safety protocols and stuff. And, I mean, I don't want to get overly pessimistic about that stuff getting sorted out, because I felt that way about hockey and they managed to find their way. But you are talking about obviously much bigger teams, and even you're talking about a different sport. As much contact as there is in hockey, it's not like every play man-on-man on the line of scrimmage and all that like football is. I just think there's a lot maybe to consider there, and thus the difficulty in getting that ironed out.
Yeah, and of course, there's still the finances that they haven't agreed on. There's still how many preseason games. I mean, there were supposed to be preseason games. What, today is July, what, 16th?
14th.
I mean, you're supposed to have preseason games in just a few weeks, and, like, that's what, is that out of the window? Like, the reporting was they were going to eliminate 1-4. I haven't seen anything official from the league or anybody else as far as that's concerned. So everybody's kind of still wondering, like, what's this all going to look like? Look, even from my perspective as a professional reporter who covers the team on a daily basis, I'm involved now with, you know, media emails and understanding what we're supposed to do and going through. And we have a lot of questions about when we're supposed to report, but when that happens, like, how we're supposed to go about doing it, who's allowed there, how many people are allowed there. There's a group of pool reporters that if they get put inside, guys, like, because of weather, only certain people are actually going to be allowed in to report on practice and then disseminate the information to the rest of the people. There's a lot of things that are moving here for all different levels.
Yeah, I wonder if just they're trying to wait as long as they can and hope, they're hoping that the current top story, which is the continuing spikes and records set in places like Florida, will change to a point where maybe in a week everybody, like, this would be a week or a 2 week stretch where I think, like, the public, you know, just a reflection of the public, players would be like, what do you actually want? Like, are we going now? Because it's worse than ever here now, wherever, you know, the players might be living. So if they can get it, if it changes by next week, say, that might just be a better time to announce something. So that's all I'm thinking about there.
Well, the other thing is I think this is the case, but I'm still trying to find if I can find it somewhere. Has Cuomo specifically said that any pro athletes coming in, like, for training camp don't have to quarantine? Because I think he said that for baseball, but I don't know if he said all pro athletes. And if that's the case, you have guys that be showing up here this week, then, you know, you have basically what if they're inside the 14-day window and that's not the case? I mean, so
right.
I think that's the case, like, but I don't know. I haven't seen that officially written anywhere necessarily.
No, that's interesting. Like, I don't know what special rules there might be for the players, but
right.
It is today, like that, or yesterday, that was, it's 14 days and you sign a form and yep. Anybody flying in. So yeah, like you might think that players will start to arrive, you know, right now because of that, but I don't, like, do you have any sense of that happening? It could be happening, but I don't know.
I thought I heard or read one or the other that when this was started, he basically said, like, Yankees and Mets players are exempt, like, they don't have to do that. So I'm assuming that would be the case with football players, but I'm not totally positive if
okay.
He's actually said that.
Where are we on the series of last year's games? Are we getting another one, like, soon?
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully tomorrow I'm going to have the Philadelphia one wrapped up. Yeah, I did Miami, got Philadelphia here, and I was looking back, and I had a trivia question on Twitter the other day because I was looking at this game and looking at, you know, what was expected. The Bills were favored in this game by 1 point against Philadelphia, against the Eagles, and of course they wound up losing the game. It was their worst loss of the year. It was the worst game they played of the year, I think, you know, in many ways, I would say. But the trivia question was, the Bills have only lost 3 times as favorites in the past 3 years. They've actually been favorites, I think it was like, what's the overall record? It was 9-3 or 10-3. I can't remember exactly, but they've lost 3 times, maybe even 15-3. But 3 games they've been favorites. That was one of them. Do you know the other two, Mike?
I would guess that when New England was here last year, week 4, that was close to a push. So maybe they were a 1-point favorite that day?
No, that was not one. In fact, I'll give you a little hint. It's only one game in each of the last 3 years. They were favored but lost in one game in okay. each of the last 3 years separately.
Were they favored against New Orleans? No.
No.
Good, because that
they
was
were favored. They were favored at home against the Jets in 18, and they lost. And they were favored at the Jets on Thursday Night Football after the Kelvin Benjamin trade and lost.
Okay. Yeah, that was
those
kind
are
of
the
a,
only three.
That Jet game was kind of a blowout. There are other Thursday Night Jet games, but that one was a bad night.
Right.
And then this game against the Jets in 18 was here?
Yeah, they lost 27-23. It's the Matt Milano broken leg game, week 14.
Yeah, Darnold did a nice job late. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. But getting back to Philadelphia, so the Bills wound up 1-point favorites in that game. If you remember, going into the this is one of the things I'll be talking about on the podcast when it's complete. This was like a critical moment for the Eagles. This was like a very big swing game for them. They were reeling. They had just come off couple losses. They had their Orlando Scandrick, I think it was, went on TV and said all this stuff, and you know, they could have gone one way or the other, and of course they came out, they played a really good game against the Bills that day, and the Bills just did not play very well against the Eagles on that day.
Yeah, the Eagles seemed like they were maybe in disarray coming into that game.
Right. Do you guys watch All or Nothing, the Amazon series?
I have not.
It's really good. In case people don't know, it's just like Hard Knocks, but instead of following a team for one training camp / preseason, they follow a team for the whole regular season. And last year it was the Eagles. So that game in Buffalo is one of the games that they had a lot of like you know, behind the scenes stuff and mic'd up guys. And it's really cool. So if you get a chance, if anybody gets a chance, you know, go watch that and you'll see that game and, you know, some of the ways that the Eagles were talking, couple of things they tried to do game plan wise or whatever. But I just found that interesting. And that's something I'll talk about as well. The Eagles, you know, they really needed that game badly. And, you know, they came out and they looked like a team that was veteran, ready to handle a team in crisis situation.
I am wrong on that Patriot game. There was another year where they were a favorite. Maybe that goes back to Rex, but New England was -7 in week 4 when they won here 16-10, the block punt.
Yeah. The finale last year against the Jets, the Bills wouldn't have been favored there because everybody was sitting, so they weren't.
It was close. It was like 1 or 2. I bet the Bills that day. I was off from work, and I bet the Bills and, you know, lost.
Good job.
It was the Bills were 1-point underdogs, I believe. Yeah, and when I threw it out there, some people guessed Cleveland, but they weren't favored in Cleveland. They were 3-point underdogs in Cleveland. But yeah, I mean the Bills, and the reason is under Sean McDermott, they've done a good job as favorites, like winning the game. I don't know against the spread, I don't know, but winning the actual game that they've been favored in, they've done their job. They only have 3 losses, and it's 1 in 2017, 1 in 2018, and 1 in 2019.
I'm gonna look that up and play with that a little bit. Thanks, Sal.
Okay, thanks, guys.
There you go, Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline, and his appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
It's been a long time since I thought about this, like the Bills and the spread last year.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I can be forgiven for that. I just think, like, under was the play, wasn't it, last year with them? Like, they were, how many times did they give up 24 points? Maybe one all year? Maybe that Philadelphia game is it?
That Eagle game might have been it.
Yeah, like they just did not give up points, and they also didn't blow anybody out, really. So I haven't thought about this, though. Have they been good against the spread as a favorite? Have they covered most of those games? I don't know. Sal brings that up, and I don't know what the answer is. I'll see how easy it is to find out. Makeacall.com doesn't have it. I know that. I just looked.
Okay.
It's not on there.
That's something that maybe, you know, down the road, me and my team could feature on makeacall.com.
Yes.
I have a team now, by the way.
Good.
Formulated it very quick. Fred and Leo. That's my team.
I heard from Fred during the Sal segment.
Yes, Fred was, I don't know what was going on out there, but.
He sounded like maybe he got his paw stuck in a jar of olives. It didn't sound good.
Fred would not panic about a jar of a can of olives on his. He would just like he'd just get off my paw and just flick it away.
Well, I didn't want. Speaking of paws, I did not want to just paw over all the olives. Like I could have pushed down and basically just mushed them and ruined them. But I'm like, no, I got to get out of this. I got to get my hand out of this thing before I touch any more food.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to a cut that led to the injury. 803-0550 is the number. We've got open lines next hour talking mostly Bills. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, here on WGR.